Om Agyanatimirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Dina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Dina Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadahmayam Dadati Swapatantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Parakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadhutam Vrijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shivishakanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindo Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpatrubhyascha Kripasindubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasari Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Gopremanande Haribo. Today we're looking at the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita and the first seven verses of the fifth chapter. It's based on begins on page 243. And what is the name of the fifth chapter? Krishna Consciousness. Karma Yoga, action in Krishna Consciousness. So the first verse I'll say, and then please repeat. Arjuna Vacha Sanyasam Karmanam Krishna Punar Yogam Chasham Sasi Yachtraya Etayorekam Tanme Bruhi Sunishchitam. Arjuna Uvacha. Arjuna said, sannyasam, renunciation, karmanam, of all activities, Krishna, O Krishna, punaha, again, yogam, devotional service, cha, also, shamsasi, you are praising, yat, which, shreyaha, is more beneficial, etayor, of these two, ekam, one, tut, that, me, unto me, bruhi, please tell, sunishchitam, definitely. Translation, Arjuna said, O Krishna, first of all you asked me to renounce work, and then again you recommend work with devotion. Now will you kindly tell me, definitely, which of the two is more beneficial? Please repeat. Arjuna said, O Krishna, first of all you asked me to renounce work. And then again you recommend work with devotion. Now will you kindly tell me, definitely, which of the two is more beneficial? Srila Prabhupada's purport. In this fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that work in devotional service is better than dry mental speculation. Devotional service is easier than the latter because being transcendental in nature, it frees one from reaction. In the second chapter, preliminary knowledge of the soul and its entanglement in the material body were explained. Where were they explained? Where in the second chapter? Preliminary knowledge of the soul and its entanglement in the material body was explained. 13 to 30. Can you name one of them? There you go. dehinosmin yata dehe jovanam jara tata dehantara praptir dhiras tatra namuyati. Now, how does that explain the entanglement of the soul, preliminary knowledge of the soul and entanglement in the material body? Is that explained in that verse? Well, let's first look at this one before we pass on. Just see if we can squeeze it into the parameter. Dehino asmin yata dehe komaranyobaram jara. Does it describe the soul's entanglement with the body? In what way? Oh, do we have the microphones too? Let's use them for the sake of...
So it talks about the soul's entanglement in the sense that... the soul thinks it's the body and it's undergoing the three stages. But then by contrast, it says that the dhiras, and then similarly it goes beyond the body at death. But that those who are sober, they are not bewildered about it. So by contrast, it's showing the entanglement.
So it can fit, that can fit, that the soul, he's embodied, he's being bewildered because of this change from one set of bodies to the next. And obviously he's bewildered in those states because during the final change, the person who's become Dhira is not bewildered by that. Okay, what else? You got another verse that describes preliminary knowledge of the soul and his entanglement in the material body in the second chapter?
Well, that is this other verse, 2:22.
Okay.
Translation is, as a person puts on new garments, giving up old ones, the soul similarly accepts new material bodies, giving up the old and useless ones. So it still shows the association of the soul with the body, that it is acquiring and changing bodies. As long as it is entangled, it will keep on acquiring and changing bodies, and that is just like changing garments or dress.
Bravo. Excellent. Yes, it is definitely preliminary knowledge of the soul. And there are many more in that section, isn't it? Where Krishna describes how the soul's permanence, that there's much dedicated to that in that chapter, about how the soul doesn't die. He can't be withered by the wind. He can't be burned by fire. He can't be cut into pieces. And even when the bodies exchange, the soul continues on. So this is preliminary knowledge of the soul.
Also, when Krishna says to Arjuna, never was there a time when you did not exist, nor these kings, and never will be a time when they won't exist. So,
right. So this is very important preliminary knowledge of the soul. And that the soul is dehi. So if you live in a house, your house is a griha. And if you live in the house, you're a grihi. And if you have a body, it's called a deha. And if you live in the body, you're called a dehi. So the dehi means the person who lives in the deha. So that's good to know, because there's the kshetra and the kshetragya. There's the field and there's the knower of the field. And elsewhere, even in this chapter, Krishna describes the body as being the city of nine gates. Navadware pure dehi. It's a pura and it's a navadwara. It's got nine gates of the body. So thinking of it like that, we become... detached. We understand that we're not the body. The body's changing, just like cloth. It wears out, rips, tears, whatever, and you have to replace it. And in this chapter, of course, it'll come in the eighth verse, but Krishna describes how a person who has this kind of knowledge, naiva kinjit karomiti yukto manye tatvavit. He's a tatvavit. Pashan shrinvan shprisan jigran ashnan gashan shupanshasan. He doesn't identify with all the changes of the body. Whether the senses are seeing, touching, hearing, smelling, moving about, breathing, accepting, giving away things, he knows that he's not involved with that. The body goes through, yes, the Bali Prabhu.
So is it likely, as Krishna mentioned in the second chapter, as well as 15th and 18th chapter, that I am seated in everyone's heart, and the soul's position is in the heart. That is the real position of the physical presence of the soul. So similarly, in other living beings, for example, other than human beings, like a tree or a bacteria or other living beings, where we do not see the heart, but there may be some replica. So do you have any further comments on that part? Where exactly the spirit soul lives in, for example, tree or in a germ or something like that?
In some vital part of the body, like Prabhupada said, when he was asked that question, that the soul is in the root. You're the root of the tree. And then the consciousness becomes pervading throughout the body. And, you know, some vital situation within the body of each living being. It's also, you know, the idea of the Lord being the size of a thumb is an approximation. It's not exact science, obviously, because if you hold up your thumb, it's probably different than the size of my thumb. And this is an approximation about the size of the supersoul when it's described there. Obviously, if someone has a tiny little heart or a place for it to reside, then it's going to be measured on a relative scale. So those things would be, I mean, I can't say for every exact species of life where it resides, but I would say in the vital part of the heart, because the soul is the vitality of the body and generates whatever it is. Even in, as you said, bacteria, very simple, you know, single-celled entities, the soul is there somewhere. But I've read no description, you know, of each species specifically of where the soul resides, except for probably mentioned in trees. It's within the root of the tree.
As Krishna is mentioning, sarvasya chaham hridi sannipisto, means definitely the heart may be the vital place. For example, for the tree, it may be the root. Mm-hmm. For human being, there is a heart. Or for some other aquatics, it may be in a different place like that. But exactly what it means, that I am definitely there.
Yeah.
Someplace.
That's right. Ishvara sarva bhutanam. Hride sharjun shishi. Yes, Jatha.
Did Srila Prabhupada ever mention of a spiritual heart? So I've heard some people talk about that, but I didn't read, at least in the Bhagavad Gita. Did he ever mention anything like that?
A spiritual heart?
Yeah, versus a physical heart.
Well, in the sense that, yes, we have senses, just like, you know, spiritually we also have senses. It's not that we're senseless. We're persons, and person means that we also have senses, but in the purified state, we have spiritual senses. So, you know, as far as the spiritual heart goes, when the heart is purified and, you know, no longer has material desires, this is a manifestation of our real heart. Obviously, it's there because, you know, the poetry, even the spiritual poetry, when we speak about Radha and Krishna and devotees, how they're expressing their how they're being driven by the heart. You know, there's a heartfelt, you know, love between different devotees and between Krishna and his devotees. And therefore, that is there. It's in the material world, everything is a reflection of the spiritual world. So whatever variety we see here is also there spiritually. It's just in its real and a purified state. Within the spiritual heart, you can see Hanuman. Sometimes you see pictures in India, a picture of Hanuman, when he goes like this and opens his heart, and you'll see inside who's there.
Sitaram.
Yeah, that's what's in the heart, you know. So also when Ramananda Roy came to see Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Jagannath Puri, instead of going to the Jagannath temple first, he came to see Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And after visiting Mahaprabhu, Mahaprabhu said, "Have you been to the temple yet?" And he said, "I have not been to the temple yet." And Mahaprabhu was astonished, and he mildly chastised, said, "Why did you come to see me first and you didn't go see Lord Jagannath first?" And Ramananda Roy said, "The heart is the charioteer, and the body is just like the chariot, and it drives wherever the heart takes it." So in the spiritual, we have a spiritual heart. It's what, you know, the seat of our spiritual emotion. Now it's just represented by this, you know, mechanical body. But it's there. Spiritual senses are there. In the second chapter, preliminary knowledge of the soul and its entanglement in the material body were explained. Very important to know that section because it's the basis of spiritual life, actually, to know the difference between the soul and the body, the kshetra and the kshetragya. How to get out of this material encagement, page 243. How to get out of this material encagement by buddhi yoga or devotional service was also explained therein. Therein means in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, right? So Krishna he talks about this process of buddhi yoga in the second chapter, begins to describe how by acting in Krishna consciousness and he gives intelligence from within the heart, how we can begin to come toward him. And he says, Neha bikramanashosti pratyavayo nividyate Swalpamapyasidharmasya trayate manto bhayat, that even a little beginning on that process can save us from the most dangerous type of fear, falling back down again into the material existence. In the third chapter, it was explained that a person who is situated on the platform of knowledge no longer has any duties to perform. And in the fourth chapter, the Lord told Arjuna that all kinds of sacrificial work culminate in knowledge. However, at the end of the fourth chapter, the Lord advised Arjuna to wake up and fight, being situated in perfect knowledge. Therefore, by simultaneously stressing the importance of both work in devotion and inaction in knowledge, Krishna has perplexed Arjuna and confused his determination. Arjuna understands that renunciation in knowledge involves cessation of all kinds of work performed as sense activities. But if one performs work in devotional service, then how is work stopped? In other words, he thinks that sannyas, a renunciation in knowledge, should be altogether free from all kinds of activity, because work and renunciation appear to him to be incompatible. He appears not to have understood that work in full knowledge is non-reactive and is therefore the same as inaction. He inquires, therefore, whether he should cease work altogether or work with full knowledge. Text number 2. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Sanyasya karma yogascha. Nikshiyasya karavubau. Tayostu karma sannyasat. Karma yogo vishishyate. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. The personality of Godhead said, sannyasa, renunciation of work, karma yoga, work in devotion, cha, also, nikshayasya karau, leading to the path of liberation, ubao, both, tayo, of the two, two, but karma sannyasat, in comparison to the renunciation of fruit of work, karma yogaha, work in devotion, vishishyate, is better. Translation: the personality of Godhead replied, the renunciation of work and work in devotion are both good for liberation. But of the two, work in devotional service is better than renunciation of work. Please repeat. The personality of Godhead replied, the renunciation of work and work in devotion are both good for liberation. But of the two, work in devotional service is better than renunciation of work. Purport: fruit of activities seeking sense gratification are cause for material bondage. As long as one is engaged in activities aimed at improving the standard of bodily comfort, one is sure to transmigrate to different types of bodies, thereby continuing material bondage perpetually. Srimad Bhagavatam 5.5.4-6 confirms this as follows. Nunam pramata kurute vikarma yat indriya pritaya apranoti nasadamanye yata atmanoyam asanapikleshada asadeha parabhavas tavada bodha jato yavan najignasata atmatatvam altogether. Yavat kriyas tavaridam manovai karmatmakam yena sharira bandha evam manak karma vasham prayunkte evidya yatman yupadiyamane pratirna yavan mai vasudeve namuchate deha yogena tavat. People are mad after sense gratification and they do not know that this present body, which is full of miseries, is a result of one's fruitive activities in the past. Although this body is temporary, it is always giving one trouble in many ways. Therefore, to act for sense gratification is not good. One is considered to be a failure in life as long as he makes no inquiry about his real identity. As long as he does not know his real identity, he has to work for fruitive results for sense gratification. And as long as one is engrossed in the consciousness of sense gratification, one has to transmigrate from one body to another. Although the mind may be engrossed in fruitive activities and influenced by ignorance, one must develop a love for devotional service to Vasudeva. Only then can one have the opportunity to get out of the bondage of material existence. Therefore, jnana, or knowledge that one is not this material body but spirit soul, is not sufficient for liberation. One has to act in the status of spirit soul. Otherwise, there is no escape from material bondage. Action in Krishna consciousness is not, however, action on the fruit of platform. Activities performed in full knowledge strengthen one's advancement in real knowledge. Without Krishna consciousness, mere renunciation of fruitive activities does not actually purify the heart of a conditioned soul. As long as the heart is not purified, one has to work on the fruitive platform. But action in Krishna consciousness automatically helps one escape the result of fruitive action so that one need not descend to the material platform. Therefore, action in Krishna consciousness is always superior to renunciation, which always entails a risk of falling. Renunciation without Krishna consciousness is incomplete, as is confirmed by Srila Rupa Goswami in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.2.258. Prapanchikataya buddhya hari sambandhi vastunaha mumukshabhi parityago vairagyam palgukatyate. When persons eager to achieve liberation renounce things related to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, thinking them to be material, their renunciation is called incomplete. Renunciation is complete when it is in the knowledge that everything in existence belongs to the Lord and that no one should claim proprietorship over anything. One should understand that factually nothing belongs to anyone. Then, where is the question of renunciation? One who knows that everything is Krishna's property is always situated in renunciation. Since everything belongs to Krishna, everything should be employed in the service of Krishna. This perfect form of action in Krishna consciousness is far better than any amount of artificial renunciation by a sannyasi of the Mayavadi school. So it's confirmed in this verse that one who engages in work in devotional service is better than someone who just renounces work altogether, although Krishna says both are good for liberation. And this renunciation in knowledge means that knowing that the proprietor of everything is Krishna is the perfect balance, because once we have that information, who the proprietor is, then our knowledge is clear of how to engage it and for whom to engage it. So we have this knowledge also from the Sri Shapanishad. Ishavasham idam sarvam yat kincha jagat yan jagat tena tyaktena bhunjita magridha kasya swidhanam. This verse solves all problems because it tells whom everything belongs to. There are disputes all the time around the world about who everything belongs to. Countries and nations demarcate different areas of the ocean, and they say, this is our side of the ocean. Like the Japanese and the Chinese or the Koreans are now having some dispute over some part of the ocean. They say, this is our section of the ocean. and that's your section of the ocean, and don't come into our waters. Our waters? Does the Pacific Ocean belong to anyone? And the United States will say, these are our oceans, these are our beaches. Those are your beaches? They belong to you? Impossible. They belong to the Supreme Personality of God. It's actually lunacy to think that anything belongs to anyone else except for the Supreme Lord. And when you see how ridiculous these lines of demarcation are, when India and Pakistan were divided, Lord Mountbatten came from England to finally divide the country into two because it was time to move on. And he sat down in a room with a map, and he said, this is going to be Hindustan, this is going to be Pakistan. And they divided it up. And some cities got cut in half, some waterways got cut in half. And all it took was a little pen going down the... Of course, they tried to do the best they could, I'm sure, but, you know, after all, land is land. And then that belonged to one nation, the other side belonged to another nation. But actually, it all belongs to the Supreme Personality of God. He's the owner and he's the controller of all these things. He's the Ishvar. So Sri Ishapanishad says one should be very clear whom everything belongs to, and then one should understand that we have a quota. It's not that everything belongs to Krishna and we don't have anything for ourselves. No, tena tyaktena punjita. There are things, tyaktena, that he's set aside specifically for our enjoyment and our use. A cow, for instance, doesn't drink her own milk. If you try to give her milk, she won't take it. She takes grass. But if you try to give grass to a human being, the human being will not take the grass and won't digest it very well either. A cow can digest grass and turn it into nice milk. And a human being can drink the milk and have vigor and vitality and get good brain substance to inquire about the absolute truth. So everyone has their particular quota in nature. And it all belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And when people adhere to this philosophy, then it's very clear about how to engage in the world and how to use one's resources in the service of the Lord. Do you have a question? Okay. So this verse given by Rupa Goswami, Prapanchakataya Buddha, Hari Sambandhi Vasuni, Mumukshabi Parityago, Vairagyam Phalgu Katyate. So there's such a thing as Phalgu Vairagya, and there's such a river is called the Phalgu River. That river looks like it's dry, but when you reach right underneath the surface, you'll find that the water is flowing underneath. And similarly, those who are apparently renounced externally but have material desires within their heart for enjoying the world, they're Phalgu Vairagis, because they are still engaged internally, thinking how to enjoy the world. The desire is still there because they haven't understood who's the proprietor. And they still think that there's an opportunity for them to enjoy this world. This is the act of contemplating the objects of the senses. In other words, there's a whole world out there full of food and money and everything else. And when I think that some of that should be mine, or that I'm the proprietor of that, I'm the lord of all I survey, or that I'm trying to get as much as possible, then I'm contemplating means I think there's a possibility for my happiness and for my controlling these things. And by contemplating the objects of the senses, jayato vishayan pumsam sangasteshu pajayate, then I develop attachment for them. And from that attachment becomes a lust develops that I want to enjoy them. And when that lust is frustrated, I become angry. And when I become angry, I lose my intelligence. And then I fall back down again into the material whirlpool. So the solution to this problem is to understand who everything belongs to. When we see a wallet lying on the ground, and you have a choice, you can just leave it there and let whatever happens, happens. This is renunciation. I don't touch it. Or you can pick it up, take all the money out, and go spend it yourself. That's material life. And the third option is that you pick it up, you find out what the address is, and you take it back to the owner. And you say, here, I found your wallet. I'm giving it back to you. And this is bhakti. So these three things are always there. These options are there. This is called bhog, tyag, and bhakti. So bhog means that I attempt to enjoy everything because I think I'm the enjoyer. Mistaken idea. Tyag means I understand that I've tried to enjoy, but I can't. Therefore, I renounce it. I give it up. But it's not yours to renounce. If you walk into the Bank of America this afternoon and you say, I renounce this bank and all the money in it, I'm not going to touch it. You're a lunatic because it's not your money and it's not your bank. So tyagis are also lunatics. It's the other side of the coin. It's the pendulum swing back and forth. In the middle is a life of dedication. Dedication means I understand who it belongs to and I dedicate it to the Supreme Lord, who's Bhoktaram, Jagyatapasam, Sarvalokamaheshwaram, Suriram Sarvabhutanam, Gyafamam Shantam Richati. Krishna's like the stomach. When you feed the stomach naturally gives back to everybody else. The stomach gives back to all the limbs and the eyes and everything. And if you withhold from the stomach, thinking, let my fingers enjoy, let my toes enjoy, instead of feeding the stomach, who's just enjoying, then you lose the distribution. This is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that by serving Krishna, it's like watering the root of the tree. Then everyone else, all the demigods, everyone else becomes satisfied just by serving Krishna. So real renunciation means to be in knowledge. Knowledge of what? Knowledge of my relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And what is that relationship? He is the master, I am the servant. He's the owner, and I am the servant of the owner. When you work in a factory, the factory is owned by the owner, and all of the paraphernalia and all of the income is actually meant for his enjoyment. That's why he started the company. And I never own the company. I only take a salary. This is my position when I work at a company. You don't own Oracle. Neither do you, right? But you get a salary from Oracle. Larry Ellison owns Oracle. He owns all the he owns the company. What's that?
Majority portion, not all.
He owns the majority portion. So this is our relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But it's a when we understand our actual relationship, our natural relationship as the servants of the enjoyer, then we also enjoy. When we're reconnected with the enjoyer in our service mood of serving the Supreme Enjoyer, and then we realize that the more we feed him, the more we become fed. The more we glorify him, the more we're glorified. And Prahlad Maharaj, yes?
One comment. So actually, by reading this one memory come from, I was listening to Prabhupada walking talk with some devotees, and same thing, that how God is the proprietor and how he's the enjoyer, basically. And he was giving an example. Because the devotees, those who are asking, that modern scientists say, even though okay, he has created, he just created for something else, likely to go back to Godhead. But how come we'll understand that he is the enjoyer? And he gave a very crude example. He said, look, X person, if you are a businessman, you created a house for my enjoyment, definitely not for your enjoyment, not. Definitely it is your enjoyment you are creating. So similarly, any businessman or any rich man, he's creating a big house, a big swimming pool, on. It is for his own enjoyment. But sometimes, in the absence of the owner, the servants get the enjoyment out of this one. So similarly, God has created for his own enjoyment. Because we do not understand that one, and that's why we think that it is our own enjoyment. As long as you understand that the owner is there, then you will serve him. Like that, I think he gave.
Nice. Yes. Otherwise, it's a very disconcerting situation to not have complete knowledge or to be in ignorance and to try to enjoy a world that doesn't belong to us. Not only that, it's criminal. At the very least, it's rude. If you go to somebody's house, if we go over to Bali's house today and see things that we like and begin taking them off the shelf and thinking I'll just keep this for myself, he'll think we're very uncouth and won't invite us back to his house. So this rampage to enjoy the material nature, which is going on, is due to ignorance. And first of all, we can't enjoy these temporary resources and our relationship with them through sense gratification. This is only a temporary fleeting happiness. And however, if we turn our attention in our real knowing our real relationship with Krishna towards serving him and pleasing him, then we also enjoy. Then we actually really enjoy. Text number 3. Page 246 of the Bhagavad Gita in the chapter 5. I'll say, please repeat. Gaya sanitya sanyasi. Yona dveshi na kangshati. Nirdvanvo hi mahabaho. Sukambanda pramuchite. Gayaha should be known. Saha he. Nitya always. Sanyasi renouncer. Ya who na never. Dveshti abhors. Na nor. Kangshati desires. Nirdvanva free from all dualities. He certainly, Mahabaho, O mighty armed one, Sukham, happily, Bandhat, from bondage, Pramuchite, is completely liberated. Translation, one who neither hates nor desires the fruits of his activities is known to be always renounced. Such a person, free from all dualities, easily overcomes material bondage and is completely liberated, O mighty armed Arjuna. Please repeat. One who neither hates nor desires the fruits of his activities is known to be always renounced. Such a person, free from all dualities, easily overcomes material bondage and is completely liberated. O mighty armed Arjuna. Purport. One who is fully in Krishna consciousness is always a renouncer because he feels neither hatred nor desire for the results of his actions. Such a renouncer, dedicated to the transcendental loving service of the Lord, is fully qualified in knowledge because he knows his constitutional position in his relationship with Krishna. He knows fully well that Krishna is the whole and that he has part and parcel of Krishna. Such knowledge is perfect because it is qualitatively and quantitatively correct. The concept of oneness with Krishna is incorrect because the part cannot be equal to the whole. Knowledge that one is one in quality yet different in quantity is correct transcendental knowledge, leading one to become full in himself, having nothing to aspire to or lament over. There is no duality in his mind, because whatever he does for Krishna. Being thus freed from the platform of dualities, he is liberated even in this material world. So both sides, either dveshti or kangshati, means desiring or hating the fruits of his work. The devotee is detached from both of those things. He is not affected by his outward environment or what he gets. Naturally, as I said earlier, the Lord has filled up the universe with food and money. And how much of it can you get? Your quota. And who has decided the quota? Did you decide? The Lord does? So there's a higher law. So it's already fixed up. And Narada Muni has explained this in the 5th chapter of the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, when he says, Tasyaiva hetu prayate takovido na labhyate yad brahmatam upariyada. He describes how there is no use in trying to get more than your quota. That means it's already fixed up how much you're going to get. How much of what? How much pleasure, how much distress you're going to get in this lifetime. It's already fixed up, and you're not going to get more, and you're not going to get less. And therefore, one should endeavor very strenuously to increase the amount of happiness or to decrease the amount of distress in this world, because it's already fixed. You're not going to change that equation. Rather, one should endeavor to get out of the material world altogether, to go back home, back to Godhead. This is something that we can change, this aspect. The other part can't change. So a devotee has a clear understanding that whatever good things come or bad things come. As far as the material world is concerned, they're all bad. Prabhupada used to give the example of wet stool and dry stool. And someone might argue, they might form some theory that dry stool is better than wet stool. But after all, stool is stool. It doesn't matter wet or dry. There it is. It's just, it is what it is. So the material world is like that. We make the best use of a bad bargain. And in the process, one who learns this process of equanimity, it means not becoming affected by the external turns of events that come to us as the due course of our previous activities, and simply takes whatever comes as the Lord's mercy. Tatenu kampam susamikshamanu bunjana eva makritam vipakam. Hridvagvapur vir vidadam namaste jiveta yo mukti pade sadaya bhak. This is the guarantee that Lord Brahma speaks of for going back home, back to Godhead. This one mentality is the quintessential attitude of the devotee, which guarantees that he or she is going back home, back to Godhead. And what is that? That is that whatever comes to me, I take as the Lord's mercy. That's it. If it's good, I take it as the Lord's mercy. And if it's so-called bad, wet stool, dry stool, doesn't matter. If it comes as a good thing, I take it that I didn't deserve it. Somehow or other, Krishna provided this to use in his service. And if some reversal comes, the devotee takes it as mercy. That in these trying times, actually, I think of you more, Krishna, because you've sent these kinds of things. And in the process, that all my karma is being burned up in the process of chanting the holy name. Yet Brahma Sakshat Krita Nishchaya Api Vinashamayati Vinanda Bhogai Upaiti Nama Spuranena Tate Prarabdha Karmeti Viroti Vedaha. Rupa Goswami says in the Namashtakam that for the devotee who's chanting the holy name, eventually even all this Prarabdha Karma, it becomes destroyed. In fact, the devotee doesn't even have a material body. This is Yanamadeya Shravanadu Kirtanat Yat Smaranad Yat Pravanad Yat Smaranad Apikuchit Shadho Pisadyo Savanaya Kalpate Kutakpunaste Bhagavanu Darshana. Confirmed in the Srimad Bhagavatam, very important verse which Jiva Goswami puts forth, which is spoken by Shukadev Goswami, that says that for a person who is engaged in chanting the holy name of the Lord or any of the other direct devotional processes, such a person no longer has a material body. That body has been transformed by the touch of devotional service into a spiritual body. What to speak of someone who's seeing the Lord face to face? So the equation for a devotee is completely different than somebody who's got a stake in the material world. We have no more stake in this world. We're placing all our money, all our investments in the spiritual world. This world, we're simply maintaining what we need to maintain, but we're investing everything. Gradually, we're transferring all our assets, everything, towards the spiritual world. And in the process, whatever comes or goes, we remain detached. And we take it as Krishna's mercy. Yes, Rakshit Prabhu.
There are some who apply the logic that unless one works hard, one is not going to be able to have wealth, and that they see that wealth is desirable, although not from the point of view of greed to accumulate wealth, but sufficient wealth to stay out of debt, to stay out of poverty, and even maybe contribute some of the wealth to the Lord, to Krishna. And they are convinced by this that unless hard work is put in, that is a lot of time is put in, these things don't come. So we would have to say then, of course, the devotee is not, as you said here, the devotee is going by the quota, working for the quota. So we would then have to say that this type of logic is a false logic that one is chasing then. Would we say that? That unless, of course, you're going to strive and really put in more time than just necessary time, you won't get wealth.
Well, you can ask people how it's working out for them. Some people work really hard and they don't get ahead, right? Some people work really hard, they get ahead, and then they lose everything. Some people don't work very hard at all, and they get everything. So the common factor isn't that you work harder and then you get ahead. There's an unseen force, obviously. Otherwise, everyone would be rich and happy. Doesn't everyone want to be rich and happy? No, you don't want to be rich and happy, right? People wake up in the morning and say, "My Lord, please take away all my wealth and let a curse fall upon my house. Let my children get smallpox today." No, they're wondering, you know, which daycare is he going to? You know, is he going to catch something from everybody else? And how's that going to affect the bottom line? And how's that going to affect our happiness? Everyone's trying to avoid distress like anything. And everyone's trying to get as much happiness as possible. How's that working out for everybody? Just the way they planned it? No? Yeah, because if it worked out just the way everyone planned it, then everyone would be perfectly happy and they'd have all the money they wanted, right? And is that what the situation is? Does everyone have everything they want? Can they get it anytime they want? So it's not up to them. There's a higher power involved. And this breeds detachment within the heart of the devotee. The devotee understands that things are coming of their own accord. Yadrisha labasantushto. Krishna says, be satisfied with gain which comes of its own accord. What happens if you do that? Do you starve? Do you become, indigent and a burden on society if you're dedicated to spiritual life? And Prabhupada pointed out that he came to America without any money. By all standards, he was, material standards, he had lost everything. You know, by any material standard, he was at a major disadvantage. No money, no connections, had to beg a passage of steamship, old age. He was just listed in CNN poll or something. There was one of the big news agencies listed the top 20 people, top 10 people who had major success in the latter part of their life. And Prabhupada was listed in that list. And so, by material standards, everyone would say that he was at a disadvantage. If people were placing their bets about who is going to, beforehand, now afterwards it's a little easier, but beforehand, who is going to be successful? He brought a message into the hippie population who are interested in taking drugs and having, free sense gratification wherever they want. And he came and said that, what you really want to do is control your senses and worship God, chant Hare Krishna. Did you place your bets there? I don't think so. Wrong message, wrong time, everything wrong. No money. Heart attacks on the way over. But then Prabhupada pointed out, now look it, I'm a millionaire in every currency in the world. What other businessman has ever done that before? In 10 years, starting when you're 70 years old. So one person, then other people might start early off in life and decide that they're going to be rich. Maybe someone might decide, I'll duplicate that. I want to become a millionaire in every currency of the world. How's that going to work out for them? Maybe it will, maybe it won't. They're given a certain quota of intelligence. They can get into certain kinds of schools, and even people who get in certain kinds of schools, some make it, some don't. So this idea of happiness in the material world is just an idea. It's called Shruti Sukham. You hear about it. I just saw when I was driving over that there was a billboard for Coca-Cola, and it was announcing the two liter size of Coca-Cola, and it said, share the pleasure, and it had about 5 or 10 glasses of Coca-Cola being filled up from this 2 liter bottle. Share the pleasure. And I thought, so there it is. We finally found it. That's all you need is a 2 liter bottle of Coca-Cola, and you got yourself the pleasure. And if you look at anything carefully, that one sounds ridiculous, but everyone's buying it. You see, the logo looks like America. Everyone thinks Coca-Cola, that's quintessentially American. And, maybe if I drink that sugar water, that, I'll feel better about myself. Things will look up in life. I'll get wealth. I'll get happiness. I'll be like, who? Who's a big fat American I want to be like? Huh? Bill Gates. I'll be like Bill Gates if I drink Coca-Cola. Will that happen? In pipe dream. So it's a will-o'-the-wisp. And if you look at any kind of advertisement in this material world, either covert or overt, you'll notice that, and if you follow it out, you follow it to its last conclusion, you'll see there's nothing there. And, you know, 5-year-old boy, Prahlad Maharaj, he came right out and said it. Because he has seen it in front of his eyes. Who is the most successful materialist that we can think of? At least for a while, anyway. Hiranyakashipu. It's right in his name. Hiranya and Kashipu. He had gold and soft beds. That's what everyone wants. You know, look at it. The big houses. Everyone gets a big house. How much room do you actually need to stay in a place? But everyone gets a big house and comfy this, comfy that, so I can snuggle in, watch my big widescreen TV, and I just want to be comfortable. That's called Kashipu, soft bed. This comfort of the material world is actually uncomfortable. You'll never actually find comfort here in this material world. Eventually, you'll become uncomfortable. I remember in Denver, Colorado, I was stationed there for a little while, back when I was in the military, Brahmachari military. And we were doing book distribution at the airport. Savas was the temple president there when I was there for a little while. And we used to have a lot of new bhaktas coming in all the time. It was just the period of time. And a lot of people, very excited. You know, everyone's excited about when they first join something. The first day, the introductory day. Yeah, let's do this. And then a little while after you figure out there's a little work involved, little sense control to actually move up the ladder. Then it's like, meh, well, maybe it wasn't so good. Maybe the material world wasn't that bad after all. And so Savas, he used to tell the bhaktas if someone would come and then they'd decide, I'd like to go away again. I think sense gratification was not as bad as idea as I thought. You know, you guys are a little pessimistic. So Savas would say, okay, you can go, no problem. But one thing, before you go, just indulge me one thing. I want to take you someplace just to show you something before you go. And they go, okay. So he'd take them on a Saturday morning or a Sunday morning, either one, to the emergency room at the local general hospital. General hospital, anybody can walk in and sit down. The emergency room means, especially in the part of Denver, that he took him meant gunshot wounds. So people were stabbing each other at night, getting beat up, car accidents because they were drunk on Friday night and Saturday night, right? So Sunday morning, the place was full. It was full of these kinds of cases, people all mangled up and, you know, after drinking alcohol, getting in a fight and all these kinds of things. So we'd take them there and just, all I ask you to do is sit here for 1 hour and absorb the feelings. And then if you still want to go, fine, you can leave. And they go, all right, I'll go back to the temple. I thought the incense smelled better than the formaldehyde and the alcohol. And the, you know, it's the material world in its raw form is very scary, actually. The raw, bare-bone vision of this material world is frightening. And it's dangerous. It's a precarious place. We're in a very precarious situation. Kama dala jala jivana talamala. The great poet, Govindadas says that we're resting in a situation where we could roll off at any second, and we don't know where we're going. And therefore, we should take very seriously the time that we have in this life and not dedicate it to trying to get ahead materially, because you're not gonna get more and you're not gonna get less anyway. So, does that mean that I should be irresponsible? No, it doesn't. Balasyaneha sharanam pitaro nishingha nartasya chagamana dhanvati majitonyo. Prahlad Maharaj said a similar thing. He observed in the world that people may try to protect their children, for instance. And can they always protect their children? Do the best you can, right? But, you know, children end up in all kinds of situations beyond our control. So he said, Prahlad Maharaj said this. He said, parents can't actually protect their children. And he said, a boat on water cannot save a drowning man. My great-grandfather was on the maiden voyage of the Titanic. Yes. He was a wealthy man, actually. He was an inventor, and he used to invent. I still have some of his original patents. My uncle sent them to me. And he invented some breakthrough inventions for steamships and other kinds of things. He was an engineer, and he made a lot of money from his patents. And he had gotten, because a lot of rich people got on this Titanic voyage. And he had, at the last minute, decided to go on the Titanic. So he got on, and he hadn't paid his bill yet for the Titanic. And somehow the wire didn't come through. Wire from the office didn't come through for payment. So they took him off the ship. That's my great-grandfather. And then this whole ship went down, and it wasn't meant to go down. That ship was meant to, unsinkable ship. They built it, and they bragged about it, and it was the greatest technological breakthrough, that ship would not be sunk. And it sunk on the first voyage, and most of the people were drowned. So Prahlad Maharaj says that a boat on the water can't save a drowning man. And he says medicine can't save a sick patient. What a radical thing to say. Don't say it around the medical industry, right? The pharmaceutical industry will stop you from saying that. But actually, where's the place where you're most likely to get sick these days? I'll give you one guess. It starts with an H. The hospital. You want to get really sick? Go to the hospital. They got man-eating viruses in there that they can't stop. Flesh-eating bacteria that's unstoppable now. Bed bugs. Did you know there's a bed bug? I'm getting really gross here, huh? There's a bed bug infestation all over America right now. Even in the richest homes in America, there's bed bugs showing up. And you know what? It's really hard to kill them because they're impervious to the poison. The poison we used back in the 60s to get rid of bed bugs was DDT, and they developed a resistance to it. And now there's nothing that'll kill them. Except for heat. You got to seal off your whole house, every hole in the house, and then you got to put heaters in there and heat it up to 140 degrees. And then maybe if you're lucky, they'll die off. But they're everywhere. Big, rich nation, and we're stopped by bed bugs. You can buy the most expensive apartment in uptown New York, bed bugs. No, they're in there now. It's an infestation, bed bugs. In the richest apartments in the best parts of New York that cost $10 million for a little apartment. You might have the best GPS in the world. Does it mean you won't get lost? Happens all the time. People get lost. All these material arrangements that everyone takes shelter of. Deha patra kala tradeshu atma saini sasatsapi. Tesham pramato nidhanam pashyana pina pashyati. The Shukadeva Goswami says, this is taking shelter of the fallible soldiers. Fallible soldiers. So taking shelter of Krishna. This is the topic of the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita. And one who knows clearly that Krishna is the controller and that things come of their own accord. I was going to answer the question, does it mean that we should be irresponsible? Still Prahlad Maharaj says, even though you can't save your children, you still do your due diligence. But you depend on Krishna. And even though medicine can't save you, you find the best solution possible to take to cure the disease, but then you depend on Krishna.
Actually, I was just thinking of regarding the destiny. When the Rajasya Yajna completed, at the time, Srila Vyasadeva, he was there, and he told to Yudhishthira Maharaj that by my predictions there, another 13 years will be very hardship for you. And then he didn't give the details. Then Yudhishthira Maharaj was contemplating that, is the destiny is predefined or something, because before you know, then he did, I think, 5 vows that, because I am a Kshatriya, and if 13 years is hardship, then definitely it will be a quarrel between or a fight between another Kshatriya. So I will not take the rude words. I will be very merciful to all the Kshatriyas around this one and that. So this is one example then. Again, it was a commentary given Narad that you cannot change it. It is all pre-planned. The second time also it is said in when Bali Maharaj attacked the king of heaven Indra did not take, he was afraid, but he talked to his spiritual master, Brihaspati, that what to be done next. And he said, now you have to follow the destiny, because that's why you have to go invisible, incognito, somewhere else, because Bali Maharaj has been endowed with power by the Brahmanas. So sometimes we need to depend on the destiny, irrespective of how hard you try.
That's right. There, shifting of the modes of material nature. Lord Vishnu explained that sometimes the mode of goodness is prominent and the demigods become victorious, and other times the mode of ignorance is prominent and the demons become predominant. However, for the devotee is always depending on Krishna. And Narayanak Paraksarvena Kutashchana Bhibhyati Swarga Pavarga Narakeshu Apituliana Darshana. The devotee sees equally heaven or hell, either situation. Krishna uses it the devotee uses it in the service of Krishna, whether he's put in an adverse situation or he's put in a good situation. Prabhupada used to say that a good businessman, he makes money whether the stock market's going up or down, either way. So devotee, any situation, the devotee uses it in Krishna's service. And apparent throughout the Bhagavad Gita, especially 8th chapter, when Krishna talks about making arrangements to leave the world, even, that the yogis organize their life in such a way that they can leave the body at the auspicious time to reach the auspicious destination. But the devotee simply engages in devotional service and leaves it to Krishna. So this is the safe position. So we depend on Krishna for everything, do our due diligence, and save the balance of our time for hearing and chanting, for developing our love for Krishna, because we only have a limited amount of time. Do you know how much time you have? 25,000 days. How's that? What if we gave everyone, did you know that you had 25,000 days? That's from the time you were born. There's a few less now. If you live to 75 years of age, you have 25,000 days. So, that's the average age. People live to 75. You get 25,000 days. Prahlad Maharaj points out that you wasted a lot of it already. In childhood, you know, you're just babbling around and playing pretty much uselessly. I mean, it's good for development and everything like that, but spiritually, there's not a lot of investment there. Unless actually you grow up in Krishna consciousness, because then you have the good fortune of actually, you know, being around kirtan and the sound vibration from the very beginning. But generally, in childhood, it's completely wasted. And in old age, you can barely do anything about it, because you can become invalid. And then sleep is another state of consciousness that's a waste of time. So when you subtract all that out, you have very few days. This was what Prahlad Maharaj was instructing to his school friends and saying, think of how much time you have. Around the time of Y2K, they used to have these little countdown clocks because the end of the world was coming. And it was showing, you know, how much time you had left, really, before you had to just head to the hills and abandon everything. Your clock radio and your, you know, your car wouldn't work anymore, nothing. Everything would just lock up and freeze because, you know, the numbers didn't match up or something. So they had these clocks that were counting down to midnight at Y2K. And I was thinking that it would be more beneficial to actually have if everyone had a little name badge, you know, a little clock we could put on them, and it would tell how many days they had left to live. What if you had one of those you could walk around with? Of course, we could calculate it by, you know, using statistics, right? Anybody here good at statistics? You study statistics? And you just like the insurance companies do, you figure out what's the average age and then what's your age and then what kind of, health group you come from, whether you're going to live longer or shorter. You can calculate all those things, and then we'll put on you a little thing that says, okay, you have, you know, you have 5,000 days left. Would that change the way you organize your time if you had a little thing that said you have 5,000 days left? Change the way I organize my time. That's how time management is all based on the finite amount of time. That's why you get a lot more done before you fly out of the country. Like right now, I'm getting a lot more done than I usually do, because if I don't do it now, I'm really going to be in trouble. So you know, when we realize how little time we have, how it's finite, then we can invest it and not invest it in a waste of time, which is trying to get more material facility. That's an utter waste of time. So we've got one verse here, number 4, making good progress on page 247. Karma Yoga, Action in Krishna Consciousness. Krishna is speaking directly to us now. I'll say, please repeat. Sankhya Yoga Pratak Bala. Pravadanti na Panditaha. Ekamapyastita Samyag. Ubayor Vindate Palam. Sankhya. Analytical study of the material world. Yoga, work and devotional service. Pratak, different. Bala, the less intelligent. Pravadanti, say. Na, never. Panditaha, the learned. Ekam, in one. Api, even. Astitaha, being situated. Samyak, complete. Ubayoho, of both. Vindate, enjoys. Balam, the result. Translation. Only the ignorant speak of devotional service, karma yoga, as being different from the analytical study of the material world, sankhya. Those who are actually learned say that he who applies himself well to one of these paths achieves the results of both. I'll say, you say. Only the ignorant speak of devotional service, karma yoga, as being different from the analytical study of the material world. Sankhya. Those who are actually learned say that he who applies himself well to one of these paths achieves the results of both. Purport. The aim of the analytical study of the material world is to find the soul of existence. What is the aim of analytical study of the material world? Thank you. The soul of the material world is Vishnu, or the Supersoul. Devotional service to the Lord entails service to the Supersoul. Devotional service to the Lord entails what? One process is to find the root of the tree, and the other is to water the root. The real student of Sankhya philosophy finds the root of the material world, Vishnu, and then in perfect knowledge engages himself in the service of the Lord. Therefore, in essence, there is no difference between the two, because the aim of both is Vishnu. Those who do not know the ultimate end say that the purposes of Sankhya and Karma Yoga are not the same, but one who is learned knows the unifying aim in these different processes. Let's look at the 15th chapter. I want to bring your attention to a verse that tells how we must get out of the material world and then what we must do after we detach ourselves from the material world. And that's on page 633. In this verse, Krishna says, the real form of this tree, and he's describing the material world as a gigantic banyan tree, cannot be perceived in this world. No one can understand where it ends, where it begins, or where its foundation is. But with determination, one must cut down this strongly rooted tree with the weapon of detachment. Thereafter, one must seek that place from which, having gone, one never returns, and there surrender to that Supreme Personality of Godhead, from whom everything began and from whom everything has extended since time immemorial. So, this kind of detachment, asanga shastrena dridhena chitva, Krishna says we must develop this asanga or non-association with the material world, because this is the cause of our going on here. Purusha prakriti stohi bhunte prakriti jan gunan karanam gunasangosya sadasad yoni janmasu. Krishna says in the 13th chapter of the Gita that the reason that we bounce around in this material world from one good situation to a bad situation and back and forth is because of our association with various modes of material nature. So in the 15th chapter, Krishna tells us Asanga shastrena dridhena chitva. We have to cut down this root of the tree of the material existence by asanga, by non-association, non-association with the modes of material nature. One who has cultivated knowledge of the difference between matter and spirit, which is the goal of Sankhya, and to understand who is the soul behind his existence, then becomes detached from the material world, knowing that it's not stable. It's not a stable place, right? Shuti pratyaksham aityam anumanam chatushtayam. Pramaneshvanavastanad vikalpatsa virajite. This is from Krishna to Uddhava in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. He says you should use four kinds of evidence of praman to understand the instability of the material world. That is shruti, hearing, pratyaksha, direct experience, anuman, which means logic, and aityam, which means traditional wisdom. And through this praman, pramaneshvanavastanad, avastanad means you should understand that this place is not stable, not a stable place. Vikalpatsa virajate. Virajate means you should become detached from it. You should develop this asanga, not investing here anymore. So this is asanga shastrena. Use that weapon of detachment, dridhena, with great determination, chitva, to cut down the tree of material existence. But what after you cut it down? What do you do then? Then he says, tatak padam tat parimargitav yam yasmin gata na. Nirvartanti puya tameva chadyam purusham prapadye. Purusham prapadye. There's a purusha. There's actually the soul of existence behind the whole thing, who's a purusha, who's the person, who's the supreme enjoyer. Prapadye. One has to surrender there. That means that besides just asanga, shastrena, using the weapon of detachment, then we must also dedicate ourselves to the process of surrender. Surrendering to the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead through the process of devotional service. And one who does that has a positive standing in the spiritual world and gains a higher taste. And then the process of detachment from the material world becomes a natural thing. It's not a matter of restraint. Vishaya vinivartante nirahara sadehina rasavarjam rasopyasa param jishva nivartate. One gains a positive taste and experience by engaging in devotional service to the Lord, and that allows us very easily to give up the lower taste. Without that, there's every possibility of remission. Just giving up the material world without attaching oneself to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, without becoming entangled in Vrindavan life, you'll one way or another become re-entangled in the life of the material world. There's great entanglement in Vrindavan life, and we must endeavor to become entangled there. How do you become entangled in Vrindavan life? Association with whom? With somebody who has a connection to Vrindavan life, right? What is actual Vrindavan life for us? This is described by our acharyas as following the footsteps of Rupa Goswami, of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. When we are desirous, when we have a strong desire to understand, read and understand the books given to us by Rupa Goswami, we are Rupanugas, we are followers of Rupa Goswami. When we become desirous of reading and understanding these books and instructions of Rupa Goswami and following them in our life, we become entangled in Vrindavan. Rupa Goswami was a disciple of whom? But ultimately, all Lord Chaitanya. He was their life and soul. They were entangled in a life of aristocracy. Very difficult to give up. They were very brilliant. They knew seven languages. They had all the money in the world, boatloads full of gold. They had power and influence. They were telling the king what to do. And they gave it all up. Chakva turna mashesha manalapati shrenim sada. Tuchavat. They said, this is insignificant. Tuchavat means, doesn't it sound like that? It sounds like tuchavat. You know, it's a, you want a boatload full of gold? Tuchavat. That's what they, how they gave it up. And they went off. Chakva turnam, turna mashesha. They were part of the circle of influence. They had everything. And they gave it up all as insignificant. And what? How did they do it? They became entangled in the association of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They saw him, and within their heart, they had this impetus that could not be stopped by anything. All of the Goswamis, Raghunath Das Goswami came from a very wealthy family, billionaires, and they gave him everything. And they tried to keep him. They were doing the best they could, just like, you know, a lot of you have experienced that, you know, entangling you and a married life. And they got him married. They found the most beautiful girl they could possibly find, most qualified, beautiful girl, got him married, and he still wanted to take off. And his mother said, tie him up, put him in handcuffs, do whatever you have, tie him to the house. And his father said, I already did. I gave him a beautiful girl. What more do you want? How much more tied to the house could he be? Any ordinary person. But he gave it up. He ran away. He got entangled in the life of devotional service with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So our way of following this instruction of Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, becoming detached, yes, we cultivate the knowledge, but we become entangled in our devotional service. You become so entangled, you don't have 1 second left over for anything else. Your service becomes your primary focus in life. And service through whom? Through the disciple succession. The service is being passed down from Lord Chaitanya through the Goswamis, through their disciples, coming down in disciple succession. And when you join a mission, you can become entangled in that. Take the instruction from a spiritual master. You take that up as your life and soul and become entangled in that. Take anxiety for that. The anxiety is very entangling, isn't it? But it's spiritual anxiety when you're following the Goswamis of Vrindavan. You're following the Rupanugas and using your lifetime to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world and figuring out how to use every spare second to imbibe the teachings yourself and to hear and chant properly. This is the best kind of entanglement. That kind of entanglement. And in Vrindavan, the devotees are helplessly entangled in loving service to Krishna. They can't forget him even for a second, even when they want to. When Uddhava came to deliver a message to the gopis of Vrindavan from Krishna, what was that message? Krishna said, you should do this mystic yoga system, fix your mind, be equipoised, and just think of me. Wherever I am, you can think of me. And the gopis thought, we don't want to think of you, we want to forget you. You left us. It's everything. We want to forget about you, but we can't. We can't forget about you. We're so entangled in service and attachment to your lotus feet that we can't forget you even for a second. So this is the real safe position. Yene ravindaksha vamuktamaninas toyasta bhava davashuddha buddhaya aruya krichchena paramparam tata patantyato nadrita yushmarangraya. The demigods praying to Lord Krishna within the womb said, the only safe position in this world is when one has become enchanted by the lotus eyes of the Lord. One's thinking of Krishna's lotus eyes, his lotus face, and his only impetus in life is to serve Krishna. That's real liberation. All other kinds of imagined liberation or stable situation in this world, they said, aruya krishchena. It's hard work. It's very hard work to get there. Aruya krishchena parampadam tata, and then you'll fall down again. Whatever it is, you'll lose it. And Krishna says the same thing in the Bhagavad Gita. He says people work hard for reaching heaven. There's a way to reach heaven, actually, and it's described in the Vedas. There are certain yajnas to perform, certain sacrifices, a way to live your life, and you can elevate yourself to the higher planetary systems. But then Krishna says, Shinye punye martyalokam vishante evam tri dharmam anuprapana gata gata kama kama labhante. You'll use up those pious credits, you'll fall back down again and start the cycle all over again. So Sankhya Yoga, Krishna's describing here the process of analytical study of the material world. It's meant to come to understand the soul of the universe. And what is the purpose? Once one sees who is the soul of the universe, one must surrender. And this is the process of bhakti, or which is preliminarily being described as karma yoga. So when one takes the process of Sankhya, Krishna is saying, one who understands that both of these processes are meant for the same end. They're meant to bring us to this position of surrender. He understands correctly what their purpose is. But of the two, work in devotional service is better than mere renunciation of work. And that's all the verses we have time for today. But if there are any last questions, we'll answer it to the best of our ability. Vrajendra Kumar Prabhu.
Prabhuji, considering the processes of devotion service, various other processes, and the services and devotion service, there's such kind of feeling that, okay.
You said, okay, so to make sure I'm on track here. So you said there are processes of devotional service, mm-hmm. and you said there are other processes besides devotional service.
No, I'm talking about devotional services.
Okay, so there's 9 processes of devotional service, something like that you're talking about? Okay.
Yeah. And then these 9 processes, I mean, one can develop these 9 processes by doing services in Krishna consciousness. And my question is that if you want to take up some devotional process, there is certain kind of feeling and fear in it that, okay, if I cannot do it perfectly, then I won't take it up. There's certain kind of feeling like this.
Give me a specific example, what you'd be afraid of. Like what kind of service? You could...
preaching. Preaching.
Yeah, yeah.
So if I'm not able to preach perfectly...
Yeah.
You know...
And what does that mean, to preach perfectly?
thinking like, giving all answers to whatever anybody will be asking, and to be that pure example of whatever you are preaching.
Two things: perfect preaching needs to be able to give all answers to all questions, something like that.
Yeah, I mean this is how it's happening
in the
mind.
And to be a good example, to walk your talk.
Yeah. I mean, there's a very great concern.
So you might be afraid that if you go to teach Krishna consciousness to others, you might be given a question that you can't answer. That's one thing.
Right, that's one thing.
And also, someone might see you some other time and say, "Hey, I thought you said."
Yeah. So, Prabhuji, these kinds of if I'm not able to do that thing,
well,
if I'm not able to come up with that...
There's a nice answer to that that Krishna gives to Uddhava. He says, Sve Sve Adhikarya Nishta Saguna Parikirtita. He says that one should act according to one's adhikari. That means qualification. When we get into trouble is when we try to act above our adhikari. We have a certain qualification, we have a certain station in life. And if I try to go above that artificially, then I'm sure to get into trouble. It's like when you do public speaking, the recipe for disaster is to try to be somebody you're not. If you get up to speak in front of people and you try to imitate somebody else, and like if I got up and tried to imitate Bill Clinton or something, then, I'm not myself, and it's artificial. It'll be very difficult. But sve sve adhikari anishta, be fixed in your adhikari. Know what your level is. Know what your level of advancement is, and preach according to that. Saguna parikirtina. Krishna himself says this is a guna. This is a good quality. Viparyayo tu dosha syad. Ubayar... Eva nishchaya. He says that the opposite is true. If you act against your adhikari, if you try to do more than your adhikari, more than you're qualified for, this is a bad quality. It's a fault. So it's a Bhaktivinoda says a similar thing. It's very beautiful to see someone acting according to their level of advancement and not trying to do more. And it's an ugly thing to see somebody who is at a certain level of advancement, obviously, but imitating or affecting a higher level of advancement. Everyone kind of looks at him and, slow down, you're okay. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to say in a very simple way, nice sutra, this: don't try to be a great devotee. Just try to be a good devotee. You don't have to know all the answers. It's not what you know. It's who you know and what you are. That's what people respond to. I've seen it many times. I've seen devotees who are, you know, very stellar devotees, but they didn't know the perfect answer. But because of the fact that they were actually pure-hearted and they gave the best answer that they could according to their level, people took it. They accepted it. There's an empowerment that comes from acting according to your own level. So do what you can with what you have. Birds fly in the sky as high as they're able according to their strength. And some birds can fly really high and some birds can fly low, but, you know, they all do something useful, those little birds. So we're like that. We should take what we can, do what we can with what we have sincerely. And, you know, when you preach, don't try to impress. Just try to purify your own heart, first and foremost, and transmit something simple that you've realized. And then you won't run into problems. And if you don't know something, then defer. You know, you can always defer. That's the mature thing to do. Don't try to cheat. That should solve all of the problems, right? And then you can, you know, increase your adhikari gradually. The question always is, how do I get to a higher level? And the answer always is by acting properly in the level you're at now. And naturally you'll come to another level. Don't try to see Krishna. Try to act in such a way that he'll want to come and see you. Is that all right? Okay. Yes, Sunny?
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna.
I was wondering if we can get a little more explanation about this Sankhya Yoga, the Sankhya mentioning in this chapter.
Yeah.
And the reason I'm asking, is that something connected with the Sankhya Yoga that from the Kapila Dev and the Devakuti?
Yeah, that's Sankhya. If you read that section of the third canto, fourth part of the Srimad Bhagavatam, you'll find a very complete enumeration of all the elements in the material world. So there are many different ways. Krishna describes this, how there are many different ways to divide it up. It's not that there's one absolute way of dividing up all the elements. But when Hanuman Prashak Swami was here, he's expert at these kind of category answers. And he gave such a nice, simple, beautiful answer the other night when someone asked about Sankhya. He just said, here it is. Bhumirapo nalo vayu kam mano buddhir evacha ahankara ityame bina prakritir ashtada. And then the next verse, apareyami tastvanyam prakritim vidimi param. So these two verses describe Sankhya perfectly. First is earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. And above those, there's the superior energy, which is the soul. Then you got everything except for the super soul. And once you have that, then that's everything. It's divided into certain categories. And what is the purpose of it? It was just stated by Srila Prabhupada in the purport. It's to find the soul of existence. It's a kind of process of looking at everything in its categories and dividing it up to be very sure of what is actually behind everything. And once you find that, then you know everything. Yomameva masamudo janati purushottamam sasarvavid bhajatimam sarvabhavina bharata. And you can study it more minutely in that third canto, the Srimad Bhagavatam, where Kapila Dev is speaking to his mother Devahuti. And he exhaustively takes apart all the elements and how they develop and how the material world comes into creation and how it breaks back down again. And the end result is to come to the point of understanding that we don't belong to this world. We have a relationship with the Supreme Soul. And we're meant to take that up. Okay? So now we've come to the end of this particular session of reading Bhagavad Gita, but it's an eternal process. We're all eternal students in the process of devotional service. And we'll now go to our dynamic kirtan section of our program, where we get to stand up and sing and make rhythm and glorify Krishna by using our vocal cords to sing out the names of Krishna in unison. And so let's put away all the Shastra deities. These are deities that we're holding here. very carefully but expediently in all the sitting places. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai. Gaur Premanande Hari Bol.